This is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone. This is Lana, and thank you for listening wherever you may be. One of my favorite ways to listen to an interview is outside where I can get some air, have no ceiling above my head, and where I can enjoy the view. Well, since I've started this program, I've changed. And if you were to listen to my early interviews, you know that. That's what happens when you honestly pursue the truth. Along the way, some ideas you toss to the wind and others you keep and build upon. This is how it's always been. Look back at how you were in your 20s, 30s, 40s, and so on. I think it's healthy to experience the full spectrum, to know the different angles, and to reassess your stance and what you value and why. Quite frankly, I'm skeptical of people who never change or explore a new idea. And of course, with time, experience, and age, we also come to evolve and see the world based on our experiences. I'm quite disturbed by what I see happening to the age range between 15 to 25. Puritanical, zealous liberalism has been indoctrinated into this age group. From mainstream news to education, pop culture, and entertainment, liberalism is in fashion, and it all looks and sounds the same. There's nothing revolutionary about it. Joining me today to talk about liberal indoctrination, specifically in the millennials and younger, is Jamie Lewis Liardi. He is the author of Revelation, A Return to Virtue, and holds a bachelor's degree in environmental humanities and theater arts from Stony Brook University. He currently resides in the northeast of the U.S. I was very pleased and encouraged by this talk because there are teens and 20-somethings that already understand liberalism's war against the natural human, and they are revolting by returning to nature. Jamie Lewis Liardi, coming up. Welcome, Jamie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lana.
Well, you graduated university not too long ago. You went through the Marxist indoctrination hoop, and you came out the other end at a young age, and you even wrote a book about some of your experiences. So looking back, how was it for you going through 16 years of American education?
Well, I call it, in the book, I call it the Indoctrination of Fear program. And that's sort of what it is. It's you go through a process of 16 years of being told what to do, how to think, what to think, what's good, what's bad. And it's all under the veil of critical thinking. You know, they sort of tell you to be you think critically and you can question anything you want. But for those who want to seek the truth, you hit a sort of brick wall at some point, and the brick wall is political correctness. So, but 16 years of just these ideas being hammered in, and, you know, you're being conditioned to think a certain way, talk a certain way. It's sort of like behavioral training, and it's sort of creepy when you're out of it. And I'll go back to university or my old high school, and I'll see where I was, and just the I guess you can call them memes that, you know, are carried through those institutions, the way people talk, dress, act with one another. It can be depressing, but. I mean, we could talk about that later, but
so yeah, I'm hopeful because you woke up from the liberal spell, as you call it, because you received a degree in environmental humanities and theater arts, which to me just reeks of liberalism when I hear those things. So what did you discover about liberalism that finally kind of turned you off to it?
Well, the big thing, and like most of the things in the modern world, as I call it, liberalism is not what you think it is. It's a very political word, and you might be saying, oh, well, yeah, of course it's a political word because it's against conservatives. Both of those really don't mean anything. They're both wings on the same bird, in terms of their common definition. So when I say liberalism, I'm talking about, this sort of psychotic, decadent cultural conditioning or cultural conditions that we live in that are seen as normal. And they have to do with cultural Marxism. But I mean, that's, you know, another story, I guess. But the big thing with me is that only through after coming out of that indoctrination program was I able to see what I was in. You know, it's the whole proverb of the fish in the water. You know, the fish doesn't know it's in water mm-hmm. until it's out of the water. You know, you don't know what you're doing or how you're even thinking, you know, if you're constantly in that. And, you know, recently I have a friend who lives in Kansas, and I was talking to her, and she said, "Oh yeah, you know, you guys must be, I feel like you guys are so open-minded over there." I said, "Well, the only difference is that we say we're open-minded, but we're just as closed-minded as, you know, the Bible Belters or mm-hmm. the Mormons or whoever else you want to pick on."
Yeah, liberals are kind of modern day Puritans, aren't they?
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I mean by liberal, and that's what I mean by my education.
Exactly. And we always have to clarify that too. Just because we're slamming the left and liberalism does not mean that we're part of conservatism or the Zionist right either.
Right, exactly.
We reject both of it. So in your view, how has this critical thinking and logic become removed from university campuses because of political correctness?
In terms of critical thinking, it's become outlawed because in a way that we're not able to say certain things in a university classroom.
Yeah.
Once you say certain things, they throw a name at you or they throw a label on you. And I can only use my personal experience through times at university when I would read up on things at home, or I would hear something on the news that contradicted my logic, and or a professor would say something in class, and naive me, I would say, "Well, you know, what about that? Or it doesn't this mean this?" Or anything that's not kosher, I would get either looked at really funny, mm-hmm. you know, really, like I sort of said Voldemort, if you're familiar with Harry Potter.
Uh-huh.
Or the professor would just laugh it off or say, "Oh, you know, he's making a joke," or like, it was just very creepy. And then I just stopped because I said, "Oh, I guess, you know, that's a racist comment," or "that's whatever," which these words don't mean anything. Once you look at them, you know, racist, anti-Semite, neo-Nazi, blah, 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 hater, bigot. These words are just buzzwords, and they're used to destroy critical thinking and logic. And, you know, at the time I didn't realize it. And I just was going with the group psychology, just going with the group, and that's rewarded. In the university, they say, "Oh, we're critical thinkers. And, you know, we want to raise, or craft, you know, the youth of today." And it can't be, you know, and it can't be further from the truth, because they're actually crafting their own minions. They're crafting their own drones, because I'll go to the university just as a sort of experiment nowadays to sort of, you know, see if actually this is true. And you talk to people and you say a certain thing, and they'll parrot something that, you know, is a meme.
Programmed responses.
Right. And it's a very creepy thing. And again, that can be depressing for, you know, those of us who, you know, awaken to these things.
I think so, it would be an awesome documentary to do, to go audit some of these classes, you know, these more political ones, as an undercover kind of research thing, using a spy cam to film it and ask certain questions and just film responses and what's going on and what you're being taught. I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah, that's a perfect idea. And I hate to use these terms, but for lack of a better term at the moment, the left or liberalism in the modern world assumes things. And what I mean by that is they assume that, you know, women should vote, or they assume that Black Lives Matter or whatever campaign. Not to say that they do, or like women shouldn't vote or they should, but they assume these things, and they say that if you criticize them, that you're seen as a witch, essentially. It's a sort of modern day witch hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're labeled with, "Oh, you're a sexist," or "You're a racist," "Oh, you hate Black people," or "You hate women." It's like, well, no, I just want to understand what a feminist actually is, you know. And it's to the point where you know, I've lost many friends because I just refuse to partake in these. I refuse to be a drone, and I refuse to sort of cow down because it's you know, kosher, it's politically correct today.
It's incredible. You realize what mind control it is when you start losing friends or even family over some of these political topics that are trumping, you know, soil and blood and friendship even. I mean, there's people that I've known for, you know, 20 years and they've turned on me because I'm talking about these topics. It's just, yeah. I mean, that's like the ultimate mind control, and it can make you turn on your own daughters and sons and mothers and fathers, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's why, you know, that's why I called the book Revelation, because you have people like Russell Brand and blah, 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 all these people that, you know, as a side note, come from the Frankfurt School, which if you just Google that, you'll see a lot of information. These people say, oh, yeah, we need a revolution. We need to, you know, take the money from there. And, you know, I'm Robin Hood and I'm so great. And but it's like, you know, if you look at the what a revolution is, it's the sun revolves. You know, a revolution, you do a revolution, you go in a circle. So do we really want to go in a circle from where we are? Do we really want to keep spinning these tires? Do we really want to continue a system that is obviously broken, a system that's destroying us physically, mentally, and spiritually? You know, we have no health. Our health is going down. Our minds are destroyed by Bieber and, you know, butt injections and these dumb TV shows that just dumb us down, just condition us, and just all of these frivolous things. And to top it off, we have no spiritual guide, because the only spiritual guide that we had for a while in Europe was Christianity. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Christianity, you realize its evil roots. And when you look at anything else that's being portrayed in the mainstream, you know, Buddhism or the New Age cult, you start to, if you're a critical thinker, you start to see that these things are not, they don't click with you. Typically, you know, if you're European. So my point is that there's all, we're basically being swarmed by all these things. This is, I call the great degenerate toxic soup. And the way I believe out of that, for the youth who don't have power, who don't have families, who don't have clout or anything, for that matter, is to have one's own personal revelation. You know, nothing that I say is true for you unless it is true for you. I always say, if you think you know the truth, keep digging, because typically what we accept as truth is really just someone's interpretation, or it's with someone's agenda. So revelation, a return to virtue, is just that. It's a call back to us. It's a return, because we are naturally virtuous. You know, we are the original, or the original aristocrats. It's where the noble blood runs in us. So it's something we just need to return to, reawaken. It's not something that we have to grab for. So in that sense, it's easy, but it's definitely something that once you open your eyes to, and once you just relentlessly go down that rabbit hole, you know, once you just grab that courage and go with it and just see where the truth takes you, it's scary, it's dark, but by God, it's the most real thing. And it's enough for us to live by and to die for, even.
I like that you say, you know, return to virtue and revolting against the modern world. Yeah, because modernity, I mean, this is going to take us down if you're paying attention and watching what's going on. It's everything that's modern right now is completely unnatural. And I come from the point of view, if it's not based on nature, it's not going to last. It's going to fall. But when you say virtue, a lot of people think, oh, you mean like Christian values or religious values or something, like not having sex before you're married, right? So when you say return to virtue, what do you mean by virtue?
Well, to clarify, from my point of view, while I do see the sort of evil, I guess you can call it evil, or the destructive roots is a better term of Christianity. It's funny because those people are sort of demonized today, the sort of, you know, Christian family type people, but that's closer to our virtues than the decadence of, you know, the twerking mm-hmm. Bieber, counter anti-culture, as I call it. So the virtues I'm specifically talking about are things like family. And they're just simple things. Things like family, self-reliance, honesty, integrity, fidelity, truth. These are, you know, things that, you know, we kind of laugh at now. You know, we laugh at these things and we
not
think,
me.
Right. But we laugh at these things and we say, oh, well, you know, that's just, you know, that's, you know, silly or that's frivolous or that's just, you know, that's just a word. But these are things that just work. You know, they're not, you know, just to be happy and fluffy and the Ten Commandments, you know, they're things that go with nature and they're things that work in our benefit in terms of being in a group that wants to get things done and depends on each other for our survival. So these virtues are sort of core and it's sort of like a compass to get you out of the toxic, degenerate Justin Bieber twerking soup.
Yeah, you're right. It is, I think you've said that it's virtue is an important way to combat cultural Marxism. And I completely agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's to me, like I said, when you don't have anything, when you don't know anything, you don't even know the truth, you go to that which has worked. You go to nature and you go to these virtues that have worked in our human world. And that's been my way out or my vision out.
It's interesting. You brought up the spiritual aspect and you told me that when it came to spiritual practices, you pretty much looked into everything except for your own native European traditions and practices. And this is really typical in America. Most of us don't know where we come from. We don't know what our ancestors thought and believed and what their traditions were. I mean, how did you come to start discovering Northern traditions or begin to look in that direction anyway?
Well, that's the sad part, because I started off Christian, Methodist, and I was raised that until 12 when I said, you know, I don't believe in a guy in the sky and I don't believe in, you know, that it's like a sort of dad figure. And I sort of saw it as Santa Claus, like an adult version of Santa Claus. And I didn't like that because I was, just trying to figure things out. I was 12. And I just was so fascinated with Native American spirituality. So, and the sort of broad term, like you go to a craft fair and they sell Native American stuff.
Dream catchers.
Yeah, dream catchers and rabbit's feet and just the paintings and the wolves and the mountains and the feathers, that stuff just really stuck with me. And I was sort of like not really seriously into it, but I just felt that was calling to me in a way. And then at some point I found out, you could say, about Buddhism and it was fascinating to me. And the concepts of Buddhism, well, specifically Zen Buddhism, which is more secular, fascinating. But again, didn't do it for me. It was still more of a sort of intellectual process. And then I sort of slipped into a sort of atheistic view and just purely survival of the fittest, Darwinian type of, we're just monkeys, but, you know, with a bigger brain who destroy the earth. And that didn't really make sense either. Because I became self-loathing. You know, then I became, oh, well, humans are just evil and, you know, we're just destructive and we kill each other and blah, blah, blah. We're bad. And specifically white people are bad because, well, I don't know. I guess I'm told that.
Yeah.
And then recently, the process of this sort of revelation of mine, I was talking to my brother and he said something, you know, about Eldar Futhark. And if you know about the runes, you know what that is, Eldar Futhark and the younger Futhark. And he said just one of the rune's names. And I just had all chills down my spine. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And then we got into this huge discussion of Asatru, Odinism, or what, you know, whatever you want to call it, Nordic mythology. And that was once I started to read about the myths, read about the stories, read about the runes, read about the history, and read about the sort of relationship of that sort of spiritual, I don't like to use the word religion, but that spiritual way of my ancestors in Europe, that got me interested. And it's been ever since, it's been this sort of, again, that tied with the virtues has been my compass to sort of realign, you know, that which I am, and understand that I come from a line of survivors. And I'm inextricably linked to those people. And I'm inextricably linked to those around me in my greater family and to those who come after me. So I have this divine responsibility to carry on that torch.
That's right.
And that is probably, you know, it's not, I can't even put it to words, because that's something you have to sort of experience for yourself. This is not what I talk about in the book specifically, but that, it's been a wild journey.
I think too, it's good, because when you have times where you feel weak, humans naturally want to draw to something spiritual. And that's why they go for, you know, Christianity and other religions. But knowing that you have ancestors that are a part of you, I mean, you're the sum total of all those that have gone before you. It's in you and literally part of your DNA, and you can tap into generations of knowledge and history and your people. It's all within you. It gives you a great strength. It does for me anyway. I know many days I can just kind of try and talk to those people and that have gone before me to try and pull out some knowledge or guidance or strength. And I find it works for me.
And the thing is that even if none of that is true, right? Even if it's just all stories and you can't talk to your ancestors or whatever, the fact is that this way, you get this strength, you get this way of dealing with daily problems. You don't become a victim. There's no room for victims in this world, in that world. And you become self-reliant, and you become trusting and truthful and loyal, and you become strong. And in a world where those things are seen as vices, that, you know, we hold up weakness, we hold up decadence, we hold up, you know, ugliness. In that world, these things are revolutionary. And that's why I say revolt against the modern world, but return your revolt into virtue.
Well, one thing that goes with this perfectly, and you talk about this, is the importance of not becoming soft, because that's what this liberal society is trying to do, soften us up on every single turn. So tell us about why it's important to not become soft. I know this ties into the New Age ideology as well.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know where to begin, because, okay, you look at, I'm speaking from the millennials. I'm 23. So I was born in 1991, and my parents and this sort of, older cohort, is the baby boomers. So if we think about history, the baby boomers came out of World War. They were the babies of those who fought in World War II. And they were born into the world of the 1950s, which was the world of convenience, the world of supermarkets. You know, the supermarkets all of a sudden sprang up like nobody's business. You know, this is when suburbs became popular. Levittown in Long Island.
Hey, you know about that. It was a Jew that started that.
Really?
Yeah, so Levittown. Let's see, who started it? The builder was the firm of Levitt and Sons, founded by Abraham Levitt. So it was actually a Jew who created the first planned community in America. And it's interesting, because people always talked about how anti-Semitic these neighborhoods were. Well, it was a Jew who started it, and he actually put in some of the clauses to appeal to the Gentiles about no Jews allowed in some of these planned communities.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm not surprised, though. Yeah. So you have the baby boomers who grow up in this very comfortable world, and they don't really have to do anything other than, you know, get a job and, you know, support your family, blah, 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 raise kids, move to Levittown. So what happens is they have children, and they teach their children those virtues. So they teach their children that way of life, because as a parent, you pass down sort of the good and the bad that you come with. So that brings us to the millennials of today, who are the sort of product of that experiment, because that way of life is very young. You know, we think today that this world of convenience, this world of the car, this car-centered world, the suburbia, the suburban sprawl, the pollution, the, you know, the monoculture farms, all of this stuff is really just 70, 60 years old since the Green Revolution and the birth of suburbia.
Yeah.
Since the end of World War II. So this is very, very young, and it's very, very dangerous when you start to look into it. But back to the softness. This type of environment, the environment of the movies, the TV, the video games, all of this stuff, is built on that sort of 1950s type of thing. So when we consume these things, when we're in that environment, we become soft. And by soft, I mean our bodies become physically soft. You poke yourself and you're not hard. You know, you're a man and you're not hard, and you don't really have arms, or you can't lift something, or you're tired all the time, or you have a giant gut. you're physically soft, and you're also mentally soft as well, because you sort of cry when somebody calls your name, and you're sort of conditioned. Again, I'm speaking as a man's point of view, because that's what I am. You're conditioned, and I don't want to pretend that I'm, you know, I can speak from a woman's point of view. But anyway, so you pretend that you're okay with these things, and you're sort of, you just parrot the condition, like we were saying before. So when you're in that, right, your mind is soft, your body's soft, and you have no expression of that which makes you unique, or that which makes you a man, that which makes you a woman. And you're in this society that's sort of nerfed, like all the corners are nerfed, yeah. like a child's playroom.
Oh yeah.
And you sort of you can't be an adult in the world. It's a very child oriented. Let me take care of you. You know, the state will take care of you. Obamacare, and if just that Republican gets in, he'll save us. It's a very, they'll do it. They'll save us. Most people don't cook for themselves. Most people don't know how to take care of their car. Most people, just consume their poisons. You know, you can call it the corporations. You can call it the Illuminati. You can call it empire, as Neil Kramer calls it. You can call it anything you want. But the fact is that there are poisons in this modern world that make us soft, that make us not which what we are, that make us constantly in a state of distress, in a state of pain, you know, not just physically, but mentally and spiritually. The porn, the music, the video games, the language, the anti-culture, as I call it, the dress. You know, all of these things add to our misery and sort of cause us to become soft.
Yeah, it's also, I see that there's an aversion when you say, you know, if you do hard work, you can succeed. I see young people scoffing at that now. You don't get rich from hard work. We all know you get rich because you oppress and exploit, you know?
Yeah, right. Or because you have white privilege.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the other side, I see this like new age pacifism, of course, and it's just drop a wish board. That's all you have to do, man. Just, you know, put it out to the universe, right? You don't actually have to do the work. It's just going to magically come to you somehow.
And it's funny because those people, and again, I was one of them, so I can only speak from experience. Those people say, oh, you know, they talk about the oneness and the oneness of things and blah, blah, blah. And they say, oh, well, you know, just give it up to the universe. The universe, it's in the universe's plan. And I got into that car accident, not because I was drunk, but it's because the universe is, you know, trying to teach me a lesson. Or how is that any different than God? Or, you know, oh, it's in God's hands or it's God's work.
Yeah.
And a lot of these times these people are self-righteous and they say, oh, how can you believe in God? You know, obviously, you know, nothing, you know, God exists, but, you know, let me chalk it up to the universe. And that New Age pacifism is very, very dangerous. And it plays into their game. It plays into the game that keeps us sick, tired, and reluctant to pursue a life of true nobility.
Yeah, I hear people all the time say, no, you're reacting. Don't say anything. Don't do anything. That's what they want you to do. And I always have to clarify, responding and dealing with a situation is much different than just being uncalculated and reacting with a hot head and not seeing what's going on. At some point, you have to deal with what's at hand and deal with what's confronting you.
Exactly. And that's a perfect way to put it. The difference between violence and defending oneself. If defending oneself is a right, you have to do it. We used to see in our tribal cultures, you can call them, when we were quote unquote barbarians, but it turns out that we were more civilized than we are today.
Yeah.
They saw you, if you didn't defend your family or even yourself, you were seen as a, not just having a sort of mental issue, but as dishonorable and one of the gravest crimes ever. So in the face of adversity, in the face of just ugliness in the grandest sense of the word and evil, if you do nothing, if you just chalk it up because, oh, I don't want to hurt anybody or I don't want to, you know, hurt anyone's feelings, then in my eyes, you're worse than the person inflicting the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And you... And the scary thing is that that's the way that our world is at the moment. A lot of people see the things that, you know, you talk about in your show and Henrik talks about. And we continue to go on as if nothing's wrong. We continue to go on as if this world is exactly the way it should be, in that it needs to be this way, or this is just the culmination of all of our hard work. And, you know, there's nothing really we can do to change. And that, you know, we're just in like this giant fishbowl and, you know, they're trying to make us do things or whatever you think. But, you know, that again, that's giving away your power, and that it just plays into that system when you don't actualize your own power, when you don't actualize that warrior spirit, that call to action, that call of duty, when you see these injustices happening. And they, you know, they just so happen to be grand, and they just so happen to be earth shattering, and they just so happen to be very, very difficult. But that does not mean you should neglect them, or you should walk away, or you should just, you know, play dumb. You know, that's the biggest crime. I mean, it's one thing to just, you know, you don't know about the bankers, you don't know about the corporations or, you know, these things. But that's one thing. But it's a whole other thing to just willingly, yeah, but, you know, I'll just work my job and have my kids and I'll be fine.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's very short-sighted. They're just thinking now. I want to think about multiple generations from now. You know, what's the earth and things going to be like 7 generations from now? We have to think that way, and we have to fight now for our children's children and their children. I don't want to be the generation like our parents that just didn't do anything.
Exactly. And the thing is that some people might listen to this and say, why are they so worked up? They might say, you know, why is he so passionate about this thing? That's, you know, what's he so afraid of? You know, everything's fine. You know, okay, things are not as good as, you know, because the wars and whatever, the rapes, the blah, 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 the animals are dying, and plants are dying. But, you know, why is he so, you know, angry? Or why is Lana so angry? That's the whole idea of a revelation, and the whole idea of questioning everything you think to be true, and everything that they tell you that is true. You know, these truths, like these truths of history, of words, of people, of places, of yourself, and just to question those things, and you'll slowly come to your own conclusions, and you'll understand why many of us are just this passionate, because your survival instinct kicks in. And you realize that things needed to be done 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 100 years ago, and that we don't have time to sit and play PlayStation, or, you know, take a vacation and sit in the sun, take my 2 weeks and take the kids. And,
that's right. We need to get serious now. We need to harden up. I've been hard on myself too. I need to be more disciplined. I need to do more. I feel like sometimes I don't do enough, and that bothers me. I want to strive for something great and excellent. Don't you?
Yeah. But again, that plays into the New Age pacifism type thing, because they say, oh, well, that's just your ego.
So yeah,
I don't care what it is. I honestly don't care what it is, whatever you want to call it, but I don't want to sit on my laurels, and I don't want to pray for somebody else to do it, or I want to become the person who I seek, who I want to be.
Exactly. It's a self-development. It's not about showing off to other people. It's about proving something to yourself, doing something for yourself.
Exactly. And whenever I do something, and if it's as trivial as driving, just doing anything, reading, watching something on the computer, or doing anything, say to myself, I do this all the time, what is this the man I want to be? Is this the kind of man I want to be? If there was a documentary film crew following me every moment of the day, from the shower to the toilet to reading to work, to the car, to singing, to gardening, to whatever. Am I proud of that footage? You can look at it that way. Do I want my kids, my children, my parents, whoever, my loved ones, to see that footage? You know, is that the man I want to be? Is that the sort of, is that how I want to see myself? Is that, who do I want to become? It's so, like you said, it's not about holding anyone down, or trying to be self-righteous, or any of these things. It's about trying to do what's right. There's a quote by Wendell Berry, who's a poet, and he said, "We don't have a right to ask whether we're going to succeed or not. The only question we have a right to ask is what's the right thing to do."
Yeah,
and that's it. That's the only thing, regardless of if it's scary, or I don't understand it, or I don't blah 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 blah. I don't want to be called to this. I don't want to be. What is the right thing to do, and how can I get there? And who else is doing that? Because on this journey, it is probably the most lonely thing you'll ever do. Because everything gets knocked down, and you have to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of that 16-year program, that 16-year indoctrination, I literally started my education. All of a sudden, I knew nothing. All of a sudden, my body was crap. All of a sudden, my spiritual body was, just complete garbage. And the things which I learned, these foundations, intellectually, were, on a lot of the cases, built on lies or war propaganda, or a political agenda. So I literally had to start from basically scratch. So just, okay, let me go back to the basics. Let me, go to those who we hold highly. Let me go to Plato. Let me go to Socrates. Let me go to Aristotle. Let me go to Jefferson. Just anything to sort of, okay, even if these people are, their ideas are crazy or whatever, they're racist or, whatever it is, that I don't care. I just want to learn it for me. I just want to just see both sides, because for 16 years, I've been completely on this one side and perpetuating an agenda that's not mine. I got to find where the center is, and, I have to sort of reorient myself. So it's sad that, after that long of a time, that, the 16-year program that teaches our youth, that educates our youth, we have to sort of throw away a lot of those programmings because they're just that. They're
and you paid thousands of dollars for it, unfortunately.
Yep.
I have friends with, you know, had huge school loans. We're talking like $200,000 and couldn't get a job. You know, it's just awful.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you brought up an important thing earlier. You said simplicity. And so I want to talk about the need for focus and simplicity, streamlining our life, because something that us Western folks, I think, need is to simplify. We've been destroyed by this disposable materialism. We're distracted by a million stupid things. So what is Spartan simplicity, as you talk about in the book?
Okay, well, simplicity is probably one of my favorite words, because for some reason, you know, it's one of those things you just, it clicks with you. I got the idea of Spartan simplicity from Henry David Thoreau, which he writes in Walden. He uses that term. And I've sort of created my own definition of what I see it as. So I'll just read from the book. Spartan simplicity, reducing your thoughts, words, and deeds to their utmost essential nature, and foregoing that which is frivolous and ineffectuous to your goals. A distilled rawness of life. It is living by a creed, a code of honor, having loyalty to something greater, something beyond mere flesh and blood. That's exactly what it is. And that's what I see, you know, is lacking. And, you know, when you read Thoreau, when you read Emerson, you see that these men have done these experiments on their own lives and come to this truth of simplicity, of understanding the world through nature, getting back to you. And this, what he calls and what I lay out here, Spartan simplicity, is a tool to get that, to sort of cut away all the fat of this modern world. To, you know, again, this is for the student, for the person in high school, college, somebody who's getting a job and thinking, why the heck am I doing this? This is a tool that you can use right now, cut away the fat, the Spartan simplicity. So to get rid of the music, the TV, the video games, the blah, 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 all this stuff, the frivolous conversations, the frivolous relationships, the casual sex, the all this stuff that is keeping you and just sedating and placating you from becoming who you are. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see people at a red light and they'll just automatically go for the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that.
And I'm thinking, why is that? You know, why do we, and, you know, of course I'm guilty of it too. And, you know, why do we, when we're alone, when our mind starts kicking in, we reach for the phone. And I, you know, that's just a symptom of a greater problem. And I ask you, whoever's listening, that if you do that, if you find yourself doing something like that, or always having to listening to music or having the TV on, ask yourself why. What are you hiding from? Are you hiding from yourself, from truth, from nature, from, you know? And that's, but again, these are scary questions, and a lot of times,
It requires work. It requires internal work once you start going down that hole.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. And it's not to say that, you know, those of us who strive for these things or try and practice these things are better or, you know, more righteous than or holier than thou. It's just that if you want the decadent Bieber type of thing, toxic soup, if you want to watch the TV and go to the football game and, you know, just do all this stuff that we see as normal today. If you want to do those things, then fine. Then there's no reason to listen to this. But if you want something else, and if you sense that there is more to life than this being a complacent consumer, then perhaps the book that I wrote, perhaps shows like yours, Lana, can help you to sort of reintegrate yourself and find your own truth.
It's interesting. The other day I had this thought. It would be one thing if, you know, I turned around and I saw that girl grab her iPhone and she's like, what am I going to do today to help save the white race? It's like, unfortunately, those people aren't sitting around there. I've got 5 minutes. I need to battle some cultural Marxism right now. You know, that would be one thing if we had armies of people who were obsessed with doing that on their technology. But unfortunately, it's about looking up with what, you know, Justin Bieber, or whoever, I don't even know who's out there anymore, what they're doing.
Right. And that's the thing that why I'm so passionate about this. And I'm sure why you do what you do and Henrik does what he does is because it comes from a deep love and a deep love of what you see as potential in other people, that we continue to do these things, that we continue to reach out and we continue to talk to people and we continue to plant seeds or whatever. It's because we care and we want a future, and we see these things, or I see these things, like the playing Angry Birds on the phone, or playing Call of Duty, you know, 12 hours a day, or jerking off to porn, or watching these movies, or listening to hip hop music. And it's very saddening, because it's like a sort of spell that people are under, that we take these things to be great, or, you know, we actually like these things. Because I feel like most people don't like these things. And, you know, I wanted to mention this. We are warriors. We still have that in us. We don't have to watch Conan or Lord of the Rings and watch this emotional porn to get a sort of, you know, emotional kick. Like, oh yeah, he's such a badass. Or, oh yeah, you know, this is so moving. And we cry and we get our, you know, feel things and whatever. We don't have to do that, because we are that. It's just that our battlefield is this. It's the modern world. So we have to stop watching these movies and living our life vicariously through some Hollywood creation, because we are those warriors. And this is our battlefield. And it's up to us whether we wield the sword or not.
Yeah, and as a man and as a woman, because there were shield maidens too, you have to tap into that. You have to find that within you and do the things that help bring that out. Sometimes I feel like confrontation or attacks can be a good thing. You know, we were just talking about that earlier today, to sharpen you up, to make you more firm. Firm in the good way. I'm not talking about bitterness, but I'm talking about, you know, more focused on your goals. You know, you've checked yourself over and over. You can take some hits, and now you're strengthening yourself with every hit that comes at you.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of today, because it is a fantastic battlefield, because every little thing that you experience or go through, you become stronger. You know, earlier today I got stopped by a cop because I rolled through a stop sign.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I thought, okay, you know, no big deal. You know, it's whatever it is. And then I thought of what I could react as, and think of this guy as, you know, just a terrible person. And, you know, why did he do this to me? And it's just a little roll through and it's no big deal. And then I thought, well, first of all, I broke the law. Second of all, it's not a big deal. And it's, you know, this is a sort of, yeah, that's a training exercise, so to speak. It's how you want to deal with the situation. You can either cry about it. You can either blame someone else. Oh, you know, he didn't have to stop me. He didn't have to, or you can take accountability for what you did. And so it's just a small, silly example, but little things like that. And, you know, waking up and, you know, not looking at your phone or not checking Facebook or your emails, stuff like that. And I talk about that in the simplifying challenge section of the book. Just doing little things in your life that can create these good habits and make you stronger and make you, you know, if you're instead of just turning on the radio and just listening to garbage, why don't you download a program from Red Ice and listen to that? Or why don't you download something or a piece of music and listen to that intensely? And that's another thing, you know, coming out of this indoctrination, I've had such an appreciation for actual music.
Me too.
And it's so beautiful. And I always tell people that you cannot compare Bach to Bieber.
No.
There is no comparison. To put him in the same sentence is disgusting, because And you might be saying, oh, that's mean, or that's just...
It's just the truth.
It's the truth, exactly. And that's the thing about nature, truth, and truth is nature.
Yeah, there's some fantastic European composers, old and then new ones, who are doing more epic and fantasy scores. That's pretty much what I listen to, meditate on, because it is uplifting and moving on a deep level. I mean, classical music, that's European music there.
Exactly. And, you know... that's basically the brunt of this conversation is you can't compare Bach to Bieber, and one is anti-culture and one is culture. It comes from a thousands of years of tradition and of discipline, and it takes work and it takes finesse and it takes beauty and it's craftsmanship, it's art. But the things that we see as art today, or that we're supposed to accept as art, is, I forget his name, but somebody, I forget when it was, 70s or something, took a defecated in a can and then had it up in the modern art museum. And we're told that that's art. Or the canvas that is smeared with period blood is art.
Yeah.
This is just disgusting. And this is not art. And this is just a symptom of these times. And it's not a bad thing to not like these things. It's strange to pretend to like them. Well, I think.
Oh yeah.
You know, but it's not a bad thing. And the thing we need to get over is being sorry for what we say and being sorry for what we think, whatever it is, because, you know, we have to say what we see. Again, this goes back to what we were saying before. If you continue to put your blinders on, or to close your ears because you're scared of your family, or you're scared of your job, or you're scared of, you know, your peer group, or, you know, what your wife will say, or anything. It's bizarre. And we have to get rid of that mindset, and we have to just go to, okay, what's the right thing to do? Let me follow the truth as far as it'll go.
That's right. You have to be unapologetic and just lead, you know, lead by example. And that's the thing, though. Everyone always wants to follow the leader. Everyone's always looking for a leader. So if you start behaving that way, eventually some people will come around. You know, it's kind of like that alpha male, alpha female thing. A little bit of that comes through once you just start, you know, not caring anymore. And just, this is who I am. This is what I want. I'm going for it. Then other people tend to respect you more, actually.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. That's the sort of schizophrenic modern world that we live in. Our genetics and our predisposition has just that. We love beautiful things, and we love strong things, whether that's a leader, whether that's a beautiful woman, or whether that's a beautiful piece of art. And, you know, to talk about, you know, we want to follow the strong leading male, the truly strong person, this sort of Socrates or Plato calls him this sort of philosophical king, or the philosopher king, the sort of person that is truly noble, the real sense of the word, and truly aristocratic, also the real sense of the word. But at the same time, you know, we feel that way, but at the same time, we're programmed to believe, oh no, equality. Freedom. Rights, free. And we don't even know what these things mean. And we don't even know where they come from, or, you know, the way that they're used to take away our strength and our power. But, you know, those few words are just examples. You know, I mean, we could talk for hours.
Well, since we've been talking about young people being mind controlled by liberalism, I wanted to play some clips from this MTV show called Faking It, which I made you watch some of that last night, right? Show revolves around two girls in high school. They're trying to fit in and become popular. And the cool girls are not the, you know, hoplon cheerleaders like when I was in school, but instead they're these puritanical social justice warriors. So they concoct this idea to fake being gay in order to get popular, and it works. So I'm going to play a sample of how they talk throughout the series.
Well, this is different. Liam's parents are rich, but he drives a beat-up biodiesel, which means he's socially aware. His best friends are a gay guy and a feminist, which means he's tolerant and accepting of strong women. And he's an artist, which means that deep down inside he's wounded.
So nowadays, to be cool, you have to be a specific, you have to meet the criteria of the specific liberal checklist, right? So how many gays, how many non-whites are you friends with? Are you a feminist, Jamie? And do you think money is evil, or do you drive a hybrid, right?
Exactly. And that's, and again, for those who see these things, like, why are they freaking out about this? You know, what's the big deal? The thing is that these things, you know, the sort of checklist that you're talking about, those things, we can't even question them in the modern world. We can't even question their validity or their usefulness or if they make sense even. We can't even do that because we're labeled intolerant or we're labeled a racist or, you know, blah, 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 the checklist of labels that they get you to stop questioning or stop using your brain, using logic. So the big thing here is to, it's not that these things are bad. They could be, they could not. But the better question to ask is, what are they? You know, why do we think this way? Or why are these ideas being portrayed? You know, why should I care about having a feminist as a friend? What is a feminist? You know, what does that even mean? And once you start asking these questions, you start to see, you know, the sort of yarn unravels. And so that's the biggest thing to take away is, it's very one-sided. And, you know, if we're going to, you know, demonize somebody, a period of in history or a, you know, an idea, you know, like the conservative character in this show or, you know, values or tradition, we should be sure that we're doing the right thing. You know, that we should be sure that we're this quote unquote liberal path that we're on, this again, quote unquote progressive path that we're on, is right and is in line with nature and truth. If it's not, then, and if it hurts our feelings, and because it's not, then so be it.
All of this is so contrived. It's stemming from social engineering, not something that's organically happening within society. I mean, they're putting laws in place to try and enforce how you should think and feel about certain peoples.
Right, exactly. And to think that, you know, somebody spends, or a company, or whatever you want to call it, spends millions of dollars an episode to create this thing. And we think that, oh, it's just entertainment. It's just to make us happy. It's just to entertain us. That is, if you believe that, you are very much asleep. And all I have to say is question, well, first follow the money, but also question why they would be using that and why, you know, you know, you watch something and, oh, that character is so evil. You know, are their ideas contradicting what you believe to be true? Or is it just that the feeling and the general zeitgeist of the piece of garbage, television, sitcom, movie, whatever it is, is it, you know, that feeling, you know, you're the whole idea of, you know, I'm with the hero because he's the main character and the cinematography is this way and the dialogue's written this way for me to feel for this person. Just to be aware of those things and to question, okay, you know, is the evil character evil?
Yeah.
Or, you know, are they not? Or is the good character good or are they not? Just question. Just question, question, question. And don't worry about being called a name or, you know, having illegal thought crime thoughts or whatever. Just question and see if it rings true for yourself. And if it doesn't, it doesn't.
I'm going to play a couple more here because remember I said they were faking being gay? So to be cool, let's play it.
I'm done pretending I'm a lesbian and I'm not going to do it anymore. But being gay is the best thing that ever happened to us.
I'm not as strong as you are, Amy. I care way too much about what those people down there think. And in the school, you have to stand out to fit in, and I'm so f***ing ordinary. You are not. Please. Being gay finally made me interesting.
So being a straight white female is boring, right? You're not interesting unless you know, sexually you've got something else going on that's just not, you know, just boring guy and girl stuff.
Yeah. And that's, you know, 50 years ago, this stuff wouldn't be on TV. And we, you know, my grandparents surely would see these things and think it was some sort of sick joke. But the fact is that this is the way that I used to see the world. This is the way that most of the youth of today are programmed to see the world, whether they like it or not, from 4 years old, 5 years old to now, you know.
Well, I've said this many times. I have no issue with gay people. There's science to back up that gay happens in the womb through hormonal processes. People are born gay. But now gays are being used as this political weapon to further other sinister agendas that have nothing to do with so-called equality. And I know gays who get this, but now if you don't like whatever outlandish behavior a specific group does, then you're the problem. And of course, certain protected groups are sanctioned by liberals and others are fair game for hate crimes, such as the primordial family unit. So now liberals are pushing everything except straight couples and primordial family units as the highest, most noble achievement on the social ladder. And this social engineering is continuing because now the girls are just picking up on whatever trend, no matter how insane. What do I need to do to become popular? Hate myself and all white people? Okay. Pretend to be gay? Okay. These girls are raised to be malleable.
Exactly. I mean, you said it perfectly.
And originally, you know, a lot of this fitting in stuff originated from evolutionary need, I think, you know, to be able to be in with the society or have your kids be in or know that they're going to survive and be taken care of. But now we don't have those kinds of evolutionary needs.
Well, I would argue that we do because, you know, our very survival is at stake and we need to sort of form a cohesive entity, zeitgeist, at least ideology to combat this sort of dark force, you know, this force of decadent destruction, this, you know, you, for lack of a better word, cultural Marxism, cultural Marxist machine that just constantly tries to destroy, you know, that which we find to be beautiful, constantly tries to destroy that which we know to be pure and sacred. And so while they exploit our genetic disposition to form groups and to form cohesive entities or I guess groups, we need to exploit that as well, and we need to band together and to stop buying into this individualistic atheism and stop buying into the individualistic materialism.
Yeah, you're right. Well, to reward what I previously said, our evolutionary needs have changed. So our ancestors worried about things like food, shelter, and protection. But now the state does a lot of that, albeit not very good. But back then they had the population base of like-minded white folks who thought tribally. So it was ingrained in them to make their people survive. And they fought harder than we do now to facilitate that survival. But now it seems our evolutionary needs are much more than food and shelter because we're bombarded on more levels than the physical. So, as you know, our very race is being threatened and it's happening on multiple levels. So it's almost worse.
Exactly. And that's why I said before, stop watching the Conan the Barbarian movies and start grabbing the sword of your battlefield, whether that's a pen, whether that's your voice, whether that's your beautiful music that you create. This sword is symbolic. And we need to wield it because this is our battlefield and these times are dire.
Okay, I'll play one more for you.
I believe in tradition. What is society but a patchwork of traditions that have been handed down from those who have come before us?
Yeah, like slavery.
No, not like slavery. Like a man opening a door for a lady. Like not talking with your mouth full. Like being able to put a nativity scene in front of your church without being sued by the ACLU. So, remember, a vote for me, I mean us, is a vote for tradition.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Lauren, for that very stirring speech. And now we'll hear from Hester's very first same-gender candidates for homecoming royalty, Karma Ashcroft and Amy Rautenfeld. Please clap.
So keep in mind, the girl that was talking there was this cute blonde, white, Texan Christian girl, right? And she's the one that's demonized in this school. So notice how traditions become a dirty word, Jamie?
Yeah. And that's, you know, we talked about this earlier before the show, that this scene in particular, the girl is saying good things. Yeah. she's saying, you know, let's preserve that which we love. Let's preserve tradition. And, you know, like holding a door open for a woman, or, you know, table manners. But again, it doesn't matter what she says, because she's the evil character, and she's the, you know, whatever the creators of the show wanted her to be. And we, the viewer, equates her with evil, or she's the bad one. So anything she says, whether we understand it or not, is grabbed, eaten by our subconscious, and that it lives there. And we live our day inspired, or for a better word, controlled by this thing that we just consumed. So again, nothing, it doesn't even matter what she says, but the fact that she is that evil character saying these things.
And it's interesting, because tradition, it can be so many things. She's talking about it's something that's passed down through the generations. And we wouldn't be where we are today enjoying the fruits of everything here if it weren't for our European traditions and culture. So it's just amazing how they can poo-poo it. And then they just say, oh, well, all our tradition is white supremacy and slavery, right? Someone yells slavery. I mean, how many times did you hear that in university?
Millions of times. And the sad thing is that You can't question these things without being called a racist, bigot, blah, 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 hater. And that's again, the sad thing about being in the university system, because you can't critically think. You can't get to the truth through this entity that I thought was set up so that we could get to the truth together, and instead of being programmed. And so that's the thing. And to sort of just question these ideas, and to not go off of our emotions or feelings and just yell out slavery from the bleachers. For slavery in particular, you know, most people just think, oh yeah, you know, it's evil white people who went to Africa and
transatlantic slave trade. That's all they know.
And just rounded up a bunch of black people because they were black, and put them to work on the farms because they're lazy white people. That's what people believe. And whether that's true or not, again, that's what people just believe. And then they perpetuate that line of thought. So, oh, it's slavery. Oh my God, white people are so racist, or this or that. It's just perpetuated. And again, not to say that this is right or the other, that's for you to decide. That's for you to look into yourself. But just to say, hold on a second. Why are we just yelling names like we're 5 years old? Why can't we just look into something rationally and come to a conclusion wherever the truth brings us? Whether that's this sort of cartoon version of, you know, that topic, or, you know, is it something more fledged out? If it's something more convoluted and not as simple as we're taught in our so-called history classes.
Well, Jamie, I've really appreciated having you here today. And was there anything else you wanted to share with us?
Just if you're feeling disparaged, if you're feeling like there's something's off, if you just feel like something's off, and you're in school and you hear these things, and but you watch these movies or you listen to this music that just speaks to your soul, you know, go with that. And just trust your instincts and sort of return to virtue, and just be relentless in your questioning and your search for the truth, because you can't go wrong.
Can you tell us also about your book that you have out now and your website?
So the book is titled Revelation, A Return to Virtue. And it's available on Amazon.com, but right now it's only available through pre-order through Indiegogo. And, you know, you get the audiobook, the ebook, and then once that campaign's done, it'll just go to Amazon. And yeah, it's just, it's, it's a lot of challenges, things that I've done in my life to sort of combat this modern decadent world in a very productive and virtuous way, a very uplifting way for not just myself, but those around me. So if you're interested, check out the book and or check out the website. I have a YouTube channel, two YouTube channels, Jamie Lewis Liardi and Simply Vegan.
By the way, we didn't get to talk about that because I like where you're coming from. I'm paleo, you're vegan, but you have this idea. Tell people about it, how those two can be united.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, specifically the vegan crowd, because that's what I'm in. It's just this sort of self-righteous, you know, this is the only way, you know, stop killing animals, you're murder, you should die. It's just very childish and it's not looking at the bigger picture. I believe that those who follow the paleo diet, which is a meat diet or it's mostly meat, vegetables, and a vegan diet, which is no meat, no dairy. These two groups have common interests, and it's to get away from Monsanto, get away from the GMOs, get away from the pesticides, the blah, 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 the factory farms. But yet, from what I've seen, the vegans just attack these paleo people because they're still eating meat. Regardless of whichever side is right, it's ridiculous to see that these two sides fighting. Because again, looking at the grander picture, it ceases to make any sense.
Well, I appreciate that about you. So thanks.
Welcome. And it's just the truth. So
yeah, it's just refreshing because I've been attacked, by several vegans too. It's like, I'm cool. If you're vegan or you want to eat what you want to eat, that's your business. I'm not going to come in there and tell you what to do. And I think every body type's a little different also. So
yeah, we have to get away from vegan supremacy.
Well, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it has been. Thanks for having me, Lana.
You know, it's really up to good parenting to raise our children to help them understand and see the world years ahead of their time, to arm them with wisdom and insight that they can stand upon. What parents tell their young sticks. We all know this. It stays with them. You can ingrain knowledge beyond their years into their psyche. As adults looking back, don't you wish there were certain words of wisdom that were bestowed upon you? Information that could have made life easier? Information that could have propelled you higher? Information that would have helped you decide the right career or the right spouse? Knowledge is power. It gives you an advantage. It's like a secret weapon. I know there are parents out there who are raising their children thoroughly, but most allow the school to do it. So what do you get? A child who is no longer your own, but a drone of the state's current propaganda. Arm your children to understand how liberalism is anti-nature, anti-human. Teach them what is the natural order on earth and their place in it. Turn them on to fun rituals and traditions that celebrate, venerate, and remember nature so they can understand it and be one with it. Then it doesn't matter what cultural Marxist filth or latest indoctrination comes their way because their shield is the truth. And nature's fundamental principles and foundational concepts are classic. It will long outlive the latest fad or fashion. Well, we appreciate all the support of our members who keep us going. A big thanks to all of you. Visit redicemembers.com to access all our material. Find Radio 314 on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, RSS, and on Stitcher. I haven't been doing as many interviews as I'm working on getting Lana's Llama, my clothing line, ready, and it's close. But I do have more interesting interviews lined up here on Radio 314. Have a great night. Talk soon.
kiss stare